Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
We're back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the Theater Arts and Culture Podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in beautiful St. Paul, Minnesota. We have another history theater episode for you. We are speaking with Comfort Dolo, who is the progenitor, the creator of Don't Miss Doris Hines. She's, I believe, acting in it. It's by Tylee Scheider, directed by Vanessa Brooke Agnes, and it is currently running right now here at History Theater, right down the street. It's running from September 18th to October 12th, 2025. It is at historytheater.com, and I'm going to read the plug, and then we'll welcome Comfort here in, and we'll get to know her. Step inside the wonderful world of Doris Hines. This talented nightclub singer moved to Minneapolis in 1963, navigating the challenges of a troubled marriage. Ooh, tell me about it. While working hard to build her musical career and raise six kids in the post-World War II era. Even Nat King Cole urged Ella Fitzgerald, "Do not miss Doris Hines." Hey, I said the title. Don't miss Doris Hines. Witness the powerful legacy of this unsung artist with a four-octave voice that enchanted audiences across the globe while her artistry stood as a pioneering force in the fight for equality. One more time, tickets, historytheater.com. Don't miss Doris Hines, September 18th to October 12th. Comfort, welcome to Mouthing Off. How are you? Nice to meet you.
Hello, hello, hello. It's nice to meet both of you as well. I'm doing so good. You had so much information. I don't think I'm needed here anymore. yeah, thank you for that. Kevin, Mari, what a pleasure it is to be on here. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Of course, yeah. And I'm sure we have just a slew of questions for you. Obviously, this is a theater arts and culture podcast. Theater comes first in that list for a reason. We're theater people. We have our own little theater company. I'm actually in a studio a block over from History Theater.
Oh.
And of course, the show's already opened, right? We're recording this 5 days, it looks like, after opening.
The official opening was the 20th. So we had two previews, one on the 18th and the 19th. And then the official opening was the 20th. And it was absolutely magnificent. It was such a great, great day, great energy, kind of a little bit of everything. And we were really honored to also have members of the Hines family there. So one of the biggest names people know is Gary Hines, who, you know, does Sounds of Blackness, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. But also it was all of her like grandkids, the nieces, nephews, everybody, you know, so really great opportunity.
I love stuff like that. What's your role in the show?
Oh, yeah.
And tell us about how you prepared for it and what the process was like. Just fill us in on the behind the curtain stuff that people love hearing.
Absolutely. So I am fortunate to be playing Doris Hines, and she preferred Doris, which when you all come to see the show, you'll hear that a little bit. So I am playing her. I get to bring her story to life. And, you know, it's really the story of who she was. It starts early on in the 1940s, and it spans over a couple of decades. And we really just get to see the hustle, the drive that she had to become who she is, to create the life that she really wanted. I've been fortunate to be a part of this process since I believe it was last year, 2024, when they did it at the, they do a Raw Stages New Works Festival every year. So I was a part of that. And then after, a few months later, they were like, oh, they're going to be producing it at the History Theater. And they invited me back. And I was like, wow, y'all like me. Thank you. You really like me. So they brought me back, and here I am now.
Yeah, that's great. Isn't that nice when you're part of the developmental process and you don't get dropped?
Yeah, I was like, thank
That's...
you. It's an honor. It really is.
Well, and do you have a, I imagine you must have to do some jazz singing, probably quite a bit of it. Do you have a background in jazz singing?
Not even a little bit. So it's really fun. So I, like most people who do theater, I got my start in middle school when we start first doing musicals and things like that. So I've always been kind of what I prefer to as more of like an actor who sings, not necessarily a singer. And so coming into this process, I think this is probably one of the biggest roles I've had musically that I can think of. And this is actually a play with music, so it's not considered a full-on musical. So we really kind of dive in. When they're talking about jazz, she was known as what's it called? The Satin Doll. She just really performed in different hotels and venues like that that were really popular back in the day. And so for me, it's very much about like, okay, I'm going to be listening to this jazz music. What do they embody? Like, because it is such a different way of singing. Because it doesn't necessarily have to just follow, I'm reading a sheet music. You can improv a little bit and kind of do a little bit of what you want with it. So, me, no jazz singer, but stepping into the shoes, it has been great.
Did you have any kind of vocal coach as a part of the process? Or,
Yeah.
well, I'm curious what kind of like musical preparation you did.
Absolutely. So, me on my own, I have been in voice lessons for a few years now. Her name is Mary Lehman. But before I get to her for a little bit, we had a music director named Aaron Vandenacker, who does a lot of music around the cities, and he also teaches a lot. And then we also had Raymond Berg, who is the pianist in the show. But some nights, either of them will perform, kind of depending, I think, on their own schedules. And throughout the process of the show, probably like once or twice a week, I would meet with Aaron and we'd kind of just go over the music. And when I say that that man is super talented, I cannot stress it high enough, because I really would just come in and we didn't really have sheet music. He would just play and I would sing and then he would adjust that. And then after a few weeks, he's like, okay, this is what we were singing. This isn't necessarily the key that you're doing it in, but I can compose it to whatever you want to be. So that's a really big pleasure that you don't get to see a lot. And then as soon as we hit the stage for Tech Week, I met Raymond Berg, who is the one who plays piano most of the nights. And then whenever I wasn't in rehearsal and I just wanted, a little bit of more practice looking at the music, I would just bring it to my voice teacher, Mary Lehman, again, and then she would help me, do all of those vocal type things like, oh, where should I be breathing here? And all of that.
How was the play conceived and written? Is there a biography she was drawing on, or did she work with the family? Do you know the background there?
Yeah, so the playwright Tylee Scheider, and I'm going to tell it to the best of my ability, but it began as a play that was actually supposed to be about the creation of the sounds of blackness. And the more that he was kind of diving into it and talking with Gary Hines, who's the current director of Sounds of Blackness, he realized that Doris Hines, his mother, kind of had a really great life, and she also performed with Sounds of Blackness. And then he was like, I kind of need to write this show about Doris. And I believe that it kind of just took off from there.
Very cool. So when did you first meet Tylee? Probably for the Raw Stages.
Yeah, Raw Stages Festival was the first time I met him. He is based in, or he lives in New Jersey, but I believe that he's come to the Twin Cities a few times, which is how I think he might have had a fellowship or something along those lines.
Sure, probably
Something
the
that
Playwright
brought,
Center.
yeah, exactly. And so something brought him here, and that was one of the shows that was chosen. So my first time meeting him was at the Raw Stages festival. And what I love about that festival is that you don't get a lot of opportunity to actually work with a playwright. Let alone one that is in the process of working on, a new production. So he has been really great about if we have questions about something, he kind of was like the first voice who was able to reach out to, different people in the family. I think he had a little bit of access that we weren't able to have, so he was kind of playing that little telephone for us. And I also believe that there is a, I think he had like letters and just different things that, we weren't able to get our hands on. So that's really how we were able to kind of figure out like, oh, is this based on life or is this just something fun that was made up for, for theatricalness?
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And what years were her heyday? Kind of the 50s and the 60s?
Yeah. So yeah, like, yeah, really. So let's see. She won the contest. Oh, I don't want to butcher this. I believe in the 50s, and she really kind of got like that big jump moving from that after she won the Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scout. And after she won that was pretty much her first step into really getting into the limelight. She just began, she was singing at like different nightclubs and things to support herself until 1963, when she did move to Minnesota after being offered a gig at the Sheraton Ritz Hotel,
Oh,
which
that's fun.
during that time, it's like if you're a hotel singer, like great, something that she could really depend on.
Yeah, that's really fun. Right when the Beatles were kind of kicking off too. What a heady time,
Yeah,
1964.
exactly.
Think about that period in time. And so what sort of work did you do to prepare in terms of research, or did you do much reading, or was it more just sort of, I'm going to live with this script and work with the playwright? What was your
Yeah,
preparation like?
it was kind of a lot actually. So I had the version of the script that we used for the Raw Stages Festival, but they were like, don't start memorizing yet because it's still going to be changing. So I was like, okay, based off of what I've read, let me just start pinpointing some of those, little things that I know aren't going to change. It's really just about researching who she was, what she's about, trying to find any kind of recordings that I could to get a feeling of her voice, her spirit, and things like that. And so I literally just went into my mail and I started what, I call my little vomit list. And whenever I found something, I would just type it down as a way of, okay, this is something that I want to come back to, that I want to do a little bit more research on. And I think some of the big things that I hit on were really just about her marriage and how that was affecting her and her dreams. And I think one of the biggest takeaways is like, oh, you really do go for your dreams. If you have something that you believe in, this is something that you're going to want to do. And so then other than that, I really just focus myself in jazz music, playing, the Nat King Cole's, the Ella Fitzgeralds, getting a feel of that, and trying to understand kind of where their mindset was in those days.
Sure. And everything was changing in the 60s too. I mean, it was
Yeah.
really all getting very heady and
Exactly.
postmodern.
Well, and even at the beginning of the show opens in the 1940s, we're getting into World War II. So there's that backdrop of that as well and what that means. And you find out pretty early on in the show that her husband is being drafted. So then how that affected her. So kind of doing that historical research too of what that meant to be, a woman in the 1940s. And there's a lot of, Rosie Riveter and type things and women taking work to, support themselves or to be a part of be able to help out the I can't find the word, but the war,
The war effort.
initiatives effort. Yes.
Saving bacon grease
Yes,
in
exactly. All
foil.
those little things.
You have your own little garden in the back, your victory garden.
Exactly.
Really intense. Wow, cool. Well, and have you ever had a role this juicy before, you know, then your name's in the title. You're playing the character. I mean, if you
Goodness
get, do you have a,
gracious.
do you have an understudy? I mean, if you, I mean, God forbid, I mean, you know, if you get
Yes. Thankfully, I do have an understudy, Charlotte McDaniel, who is a wonderful actor. She's actually playing the role of Ella Fitzgerald in the show, as well as another character. And she's also understudying, so she has had a lot to take on. And I'm so grateful for her, just in case, you know, something does happen. I know that she is ready, she's willing, and she's more than capable to step right in. But in regards to the juiciness of the role, this is probably one of the juiciest roles I've had. I actually have been a name character in a show before. I had Penumbra Theater a few years ago. They did a show called Rememory, and I played Memory Brooks. But as for juiciness, again, this is a play with music, and it's a very fast-paced show. So I think the most amount of time I'm off stage is probably 30 seconds, and that's because I have to do a costume change. And it literally is just one thing after another. And again, jumping from different decades to, you know, trying to get your mindset into whatever she's going through in life. It has been a challenge, but oh so rewarding once, you know, once I finally got that down.
Yeah, I'm so curious. I mean, you mentioned how much the show contains. I'm curious, without giving too much away, because obviously we want people to go see the show. Can you tell us a bit about sort of how it's structured and like where the music fits in? Because I feel like there's a lot of plays with music that use the music as kind of like a framing device. And then there's some that it's just kind of sprinkled throughout. So tell us a little bit about where that fits in and what we can expect from the show.
So it really works as a vehicle to show who she was and showing her development. So we have different scenes of her, you know, when she's just entering the scene and doing auditions. So it's like, oh, I'm singing this song and getting cast or not getting cast, which, you know, if you're a performer, that's something that you're used to. Just like, oh, I'm gonna go to this audition where, you know, I've got 30 seconds to show them what they, you know, want to see, hopefully. So we use that as something. And then, as you know, she begins to grow, we start seeing her in her different venues doing performances there. And then also it kind of we have the pianist is live right off of the stage. So he sometimes too is just playing music as a way to connect the scenes differently. So it's like, oh, if you're really listening, you're like, oh, that's literally the song that she's singing right now, and he's just playing all of these different chords.
And is it only or just the piano? Not that there's just the piano, but is that the primary instrument? Is there are there any
Yes,
other?
yes,
Yeah.
yes. And there
Okay, cool.
are a lot of really cool visual and, you know, sound cues, obviously, but the
Sure,
piano was kind of
sure.
that main instrument.
Yeah, I regret saying just the piano. It's like it's not the master of all instruments, you know.
Gosh, it can
So no,
do.
that's great. Of course, that makes perfect sense for a nightclub singer. Isn't that wonderful how much like entertainment and joy we can get out of just somebody, you know, with a piano and a vocalist? I
Oh
mean,
my
it's just you
gosh,
can it's
absolutely. And it's way more powerful than, you know, than just like, oh, you know, there's just like a recording playing in the background when you
Oh
really are
yeah.
experiencing it
Oh yeah.
live. And again, I'll speak again to both Aaron and Raymond, who are just fantastic musicians. Raymond, for instance, when we're, you know, just sitting on stage waiting for something, and I'll start humming a song and he'll just start playing it just from memory alone. And it's just like, how do you do that? And then he always gave me the great, like if I was afraid of that, I wasn't about to hit a note, he's like, don't worry, I'll follow you. Whatever you do is right. And I'm like, okay, thank you. That is a freedom that you don't always get.
To have that musical talent, it's just I don't have it. And there are people in my
Hopefully
family.
in
Oh.
hopefully in another lifetime, I'll be born with that one.
Well, you're talented enough to carry a play with music. So,
Thank you.
what is your musical background? Were you trained? You know, have you done musicals in the past?
Yeah,
You know, you
so
yeah.
I did, you know, I started doing, you know, your little kids choir in elementary school, and I did choir all throughout high school and a little bit of college. So it's always just been something that's really dear to me. I've always just loved singing, whether or not I'm, you know, classically trained, but I have had different voice teachers pretty much starting in, I think when I was in college was really when I first started having actual lessons. And I've been in that for, over a decade now, I think. So I definitely have some training, even though I know sometimes a little bit too hard on myself because I'm like, I feel like I should know more or do more. But I do have that training I went to my undergrad at Gustavus Adolphus College. So in Minnesota. And we did musicals every other year. And so I did, one musical while I was there. That was actually one of the first roles where I played a historical figure. I was playing Emma Goldman in Assassins, the musical. But her character sing, but I still got to sing the songs.
Sure.
Yeah. And then I think I was saying this earlier, but we all get our starts usually in, middle school, high school theater. So that's really the brunt of where I did musicals. And then, recently I haven't really done too many musicals. So this is, again, is the first big juicy, play with music where, I get the opportunity to really sing on stage.
You mentioned middle school. What are your memories of that? And are you from Minnesota or are you from somewhere else?
Yeah. I was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee, but I was raised in Minnesota. We moved to Minnesota when I was about 4 years old. So I've had most of everything here. So I did all of my schooling in the Fridley district. So I went to Hayes Elementary, Fridley Middle School, Fridley High School. And then I stayed in Minnesota for college where I went to Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota. And then the only time I left school was I got my MFA in acting from, this is a mouthful, the Case Western Reserve University Cleveland Playhouse.
It's so almost like a warm up.
Before I go on stage, I just say that 10 times. So that's kind of like my training history. And again, like where I went to school, we weren't like musically focused. I wasn't a musical theater major. I was always just like, my acting is forefront. So again, that's why I consider myself, I'm an actor who sings. But it is something that I definitely, it's a passion. It's a love of mine. So when there are musicals, sure, I love auditioning for those type of things as well.
Comfort, I'm going to ask you something very sensitive here. Are you a belter? Can you belt?
Should I step away from my microphone to demonstrate?
I have an even more sensitive question is, do you dance
at all? Oh, God. I mean, we all dance. Do I dance well? That's another question. Something that actors tend to say is, I'm a mover. I can move. So we'll go with that. And I think that is honestly one of the things that kind of kept me away from musical theater was like, people are like, I'm a triple threat. I'm like, I'm a double. I can sing and act my way pretty well. The dancing is another thing. But I really do love contemporary musicals because they're kind of musing away from the classic, Fosse things. If y'all saw Cabaret, amazing dancers, and I'm like, I can't do that, but I'm so proud of you and happy that you can do that.
Yeah, fantastic. So middle school, what was your first major major role? We're gonna get into the lore.
Oh my gosh. Well, those are two different things. The first shows and the first major role. That would have been because the director would write their own musicals and I can't remember all of them. But then seventh and eighth grade is when they start doing the big shows. So seventh grade, we did Oliver and I was in the ensemble for that. And then eighth grade, we did The Music Man. And I was one of the pick a little ladies, a pick a little, talk a little, pick a little, talk a little ladies. I was Maude. My sister Joy is an actor and I kind of followed in her footsteps because she did a lot of theater. So I was like, okay, this is kind of fun. And it wasn't something that I was necessarily thinking of like, I want to do this forever. I'm like, this is just a fun little activity, a fun little hobby that I can be doing. And then I kind of just kept with it. And then in high school, now that I'm thinking of it, I'm like, was I even cast in anything? I did all of the shows, but I'm like, what did I play? I feel like it wasn't really until I went to Gustavus that I really was really starting to get those lead roles and getting the opportunity to do things. So I know earlier I was talking about I was in Assassins, which was the musical. A big juicy role, I guess, was I was able to play Hecuba in a play. Oh. So that was that's probably one of the first big juicy roles I can say that I did there. I don't know. I feel very fortunate in everything that I've been cast in. And I never really have thought about them as like, those like big leading roles. It's just like being able to be a part of a production in general is always an honor because so many people audition, but not everybody gets cast. So I'm lucky to have whatever I get.
And is this how, like, is this your first time being with a production since its inception? Have you worked in this kind of developmental way before, or is this something totally new?
Yeah, this is something that is incredibly new. I feel like I've kind of been like a little bit further into the process with some shows where they kind of already have like a good feeling of like what the story is going to be. But literally, even up until a couple of weeks ago, Tylee, the playwright, was still making changes. So it's like something that he said in one of the rehearsals. I think I asked the question about like how the show will like change, or if there's ever a time where it's like, okay, these are the pages and we don't have to worry about any changes. And he said, you know, I have always taken it that if a playwright is still living, they can always make changes. And I was like, you know what? There we go. And he has really held on to that. Honestly, we were in Tech Week last week, and I think it was right before like the first or second preview. And they were like, we're going to switch this. They changed the order of scenes. And they were like, this makes more sense to the playwright. And we're like, great, we're all here to support you. And until you have that final draft of whatever you want, you make all the changes that you need. Because really, we are there to, you know, support him as well. This is, you know, his show, his baby. And if he sees it in a specific way, who are we to say anything else?
Yeah, without a doubt. Once again, we are talking about Don't Miss Doris Hines. We're speaking with Comfort Dolo, who plays the lead role. She plays Doris. It's a Star Tribune critics pick. Okay, so the Strib is behind it, by Tylee Scheider, directed by Vanessa Brooke Agnes, and it's running from September 18th to October 12th. So you've got plenty of time. I'm going to try to go see it there in October, and that's of course 2025. And you're listening to Mouthing Off from Bad Mouth Theater Company, badmouthtc.com. We love hearing from people. If you have a show, something to promote, Comfort, the next thing you're doing, just email us badmouthtc@gmail.com. And of course, it goes out over Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM here in beautiful St. Paul, Minnesota, and then wherever you get your podcasts. Tickets right now are on sale at historytheater.com. Comfort, I know you have a website as well. It's comfortdolo.com. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes, yes, it is. Nice and easy. Just my name.com.
And it's D-O-L-O?
Yes. C-O-M-F-O-R-T-D-O-L-O.com.
Comfort, have you done voiceover?
No, and I've been working on it though. And when I say working, that's a lie. I've been dreaming about doing it. And so I definitely think that is something that I want to do. I've always had the dream of narrating an audiobook.
Well, you know, it's a shame that Amanda isn't with us tonight. Amanda's obviously, we have three hosts, so yeah. our cup overfloweth. You know, you've got two on one anyway. But she does quite a lot of voiceover.
Oh, dang.
She does a voice for A Court of Thorns and Roses. So the fairy books.
Way.
Yes. Yes.
That is
yes.
awesome.
Yeah.
Oh
so,
gosh.
You know, I don't know. It seems to me you wouldn't have any trouble getting, you know, an agent for that. And I did a bunch of it. I mean, when I lived briefly in England, and, you know, real American voices over there are in demand. It's a different time now. Now everybody just does it remotely. But no, you'd be a cinch, I'm sure. You'd get tons of work. I wanted to ask, what was the moment you fortunately or unfortunately decided to make this your life, your profession?
Woof. Okay. It was, I was in college and sophomore year is when you have to decide on your major. And I was, you know, I knew that I wanted to be a communications major because I've just always loved things like marketing and advertising and stuff like that. But then there was just like something in me that's like, I know that even if I don't major in theater, I'm going to be a part of it. And it was National Theater Day was the day that I decided that I was going to major in it. And it was one of those things that I think there's an old, very, you know, whatever you want to say, saying about like, if you have a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And I just, that resonated with me so much. And I was like, you know what? Who cares? I'm like, I ended up double majoring because I was like, these are both things that I love. And if anything, I could be a writer or a producer for like a theater or something. So I knew that I really wanted to have both of those things in my life. And my sophomore year, we had a class where we were just developing our own show, making it was called like play devising or devising theater is what it was called.
Sure.
And I was like, this is just so much fun. And I love having fun. And life is too short to not be doing the things that you want to do. And I was like, I'm gonna do it. And I walked over to Henry McCarthy's office, and he was my advisor, who I love dearly. And he signed the paperwork, and I was like, I am now a double theater and communications major, and whatever that means, I don't know, but I know that it's right for me.
Yeah, it's such an unusual thing, especially I think in the United States, to just say I'm pursuing theater. And I love people who follow their passion. As a playwright, I have no illusions about feeding a family with it. But that's never been the point, you know. It's about that personal expression. What has it been like working with the rest of the cast? I mean, you have four other actors. It sounds
Oh
like
my God.
another one of the actors is playing Ella Fitzgerald, which is that's no small
Yes.
role. And tell us a little bit about the, I guess, the ensemble and that.
This room is it or the room is just filled with such incredible people. It's a dream. We since day one, some of us have acted together, some of us were just like Facebook friends, but we knew of each other because the theater scene is only so big in, the Twin Cities. But literally since day one, we have had an absolute blast just playing around, being dumb together, and kind of just all being like, so what are we going to do after this? Let's go hang out, let's go grab a drink or anything like that. But then while I'm here, let me just name off people because I want them all to get their credit. We've got Neil Beckerman, Darius Dotch, Ashanti Ford, and Charlotte McDaniel, who are also in the play, playing various roles, whether family members or agents or things like that. And everybody has honestly just it again, it's been a dream. And one more thing too, the understudies. Tolu, Charlotte is also an understudy. Nick Wolf and Peyton Dixon are all the people who are involved in the acting variety of the show. But really, we've all gotten along so well. I work at Trader Joe's, and being able to treat them with snacks has like made my heart so happy because it's a hidden gem that people don't realize. We have the best snacks ever.
What a great place to work as well. I mean, thinking about the discount and everything. Yeah, that'd be amazing. Yeah, I need to get to Trader Joe's now that I haven't been there in
Come on
ages.
over. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh, I love it. But that kind of also goes to the last question about when I really decided to, go for theater. So again, I lived in Cleveland for grad school, and I was one of the COVID classes. So I graduated in 2020. And we weren't able to have the big showcase with all the agents and the managers and things. And my plan was to actually move to Atlanta. But again, everything was shut down. So I was like, what's even the point? So my boyfriend and I moved to Rochester, Minnesota. And COVID went a little bit longer than we were expecting. We were staying with his friends. So we were like, we'll just, get jobs for another month or two. And so that's when I started working at Trader Joe's. And I got promoted, which brought me back to the Twin Cities. And then I realized I was putting so much more into Trader Joe's than I was to my acting, And this show was actually my first, I stepped down from being a manager to do the show because I was like, this is something that I really like, that I really believe in. And I can still work at Trader Joe's. I don't have to be a manager, but this is kind of I'm going all in and just doing it. And I've got really great, coworkers and bosses who are like, yeah, you do what you want. I work with other people who are actors as well. So they're kind of used to that schedule.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's some personal sacrifice, but this is no small role. I mean, you're and you should be able to parlay this into more work, one would think. I mean, let's talk a little bit about History Theater and what it's like working there. I mean, they're one of the great regional theaters in the country, and they have specific niche, and they have a very dedicated audience. I'd like to hear a little bit more. They're also very, very diligent about booking our show. We talk to pretty much it seems like we get an episode with every single production one way or another. And that's
kudos to y'all too. For that. That means they love you too.
Well, we love History Theater. I mean, I had a play in Raw Stages one year. They didn't produce it. My plays are a little too extreme for that audience. But I wrote about Hemingway's last days at Mayo Clinic, actually. Wow. Down in Rochester.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, people don't know he had electroshock therapy twice. Down at Mayo. Yeah, it was fascinating. It actually led a journalist to go down there, and he found some of the last photos. He found some of the last photos that were ever taken of Hemingway and the family, because there was the doctors would release Hemingway and let him come and hang out with their families at the pool or whatever. And they took some photos, and he very nearly got them to release the photos for a magazine piece, but at the very last minute they pulled the photos. So those photos have never been widely seen. In any case, History Theater promotes work like that. I mean, you know, and even this business with Doris Hines. I mean, this is a corner of Twin Cities history that I would never have heard about otherwise.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of very similar. I believe this is really my first time working with the History Theater and just diving into the shows that they've done in the past. And I'm like, this is a huge deal. You don't really have a lot of places that, you know, put that much like work and effort to bringing in these stories and really making sure that stories continue to be told and not, you know, forgotten, slipped through the cracks or anything like that. And it's been such a joy working with, you know, so much of the artistic team, the administration team. Everybody has been so helpful or willing to lend a hand to just be like, whatever you need, let us know. And again, just similar to the cast, you know, we've gone out a few times, like everybody just really is good people is what I like to call it.
Sure. I mean, and it's right in the heart of downtown St. Paul. And again, I'm recording from right across the street. Listen, downtown St. Paul, don't sleep on it. All right. Yeah, it's a little rough around the edges. It's a little sleepy. Okay, sometimes we got great restaurants. Mm-hmm. There's the Celeste Bar right across the way.
Oh my gosh, amazing!
Slick, amazing. It's an old convent that they converted into a hotel.
Yes.
It's a very old world St. Paul vibe down here by History Theater, and they finished the construction. People, okay. I sat here and I listened to construction from 6 a.m. until 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. They would work on the weekends, so I've been a little on edge.
Kevin, thank you for your sacrifice. We appreciate it.
But they finished this. We have this beautiful Pedro Park, and then, God willing, we'll have a grocery store open up again here. Lund's left $12 million in equipment before they shut down here. So in any case, you know, St. Paul's coming back. We're bringing it back, and comfort's a big part of that. You know, the Twin Cities are world famous for their sort of our sort of sleeper arts and culture scene, and it's no joke, and it takes people like Comfort to surrender their managerial positions at Trader Joe's to go all in,
do it. If you got a dream, you got to do it.
I love it. That's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit more about Doris here. We got maybe, you know, another 15, 20 minutes before we wind down. But what style of singing, you know, was it just sort of straight ahead jazz nightclub singing? Did she have it sounds like it was a 4-octave voice. I mean, that's seems like a lot of octaves.
It really is. The first music rehearsal, I said she has a 4-octave range. I do not. So let's see what I can do with this. But something really great that we were able to get our hands on was just some recordings that she did. And really, she would be singing regularly, and then all of a sudden she would drop to like octaves I've never heard a woman do before. And I was like, oh my, and then she would just pop back up like it was nothing. And so in the show, that is something that we have been playing around with, you know, playing our regular fun up-tempo songs. But then there is a song called Quiet Nights that I sing that is definitely in my lower register. So I'm trying to like get there. But she is Like no words, as you can see, no words to describe, you know, who she really was and could really do with that voice. And that's one of the reasons that she won the Arthur Godfrey's talent contest, is that she had a voice that it really made people stop, and she also had a presence as well.
And did she hang on? Sorry, Mary. Did she not have a much of a recording career?
Oh, fun story. So it not really, to answer question, yes. And one of the big things that she was booked to do was a commercial that ended up being pulled because of the time period, seeing Black people on TV. So for Dara Hines, it always felt like it was like it would always felt like she was like one step away from her big break, and then something would happen. And that's just kind of like a reoccurring theme. And again, that's why like it's so great to tell her story, because she had a lot of big breaks and she had a lot of great opportunities, being able to travel internationally, sing for our troops, again, work with Ella Fitzgerald, you know, have these big names say like, wow, this woman really is something. But it also just felt like she kind of just got like pushed to the side just a little bit and was always just like one step away from her big break.
Yeah, I'm so curious where you were able to find materials and videos of her singing, because I was hunting around and I found one PBS video.
Yep, and I
but
know
that was
exactly
all
the
I could
one.
Find. So were like, did you have any contact with the family? Were they were able to give you any recordings? Like, what were you listening to? What were you looking at?
Yeah, so I did not have contact with the family, but playwright Tylee Scheider did. And whenever he was able to get something, they gave him permission to share it with us. So we have some recordings again that I didn't even hear until getting into rehearsal. And just like you, I was trying to find things and I only found the PBS things. I'm asking the internet, I'm using the quotations so they know specifically to give me this. But it really is hard to find. And again, that's why the story is so amazing, because it's like when we were able to find these things, it's like this woman was incredible. And it's such a shame that, you know, that we don't have the access to some of these things. But I know Tylee Scheider, again, is in communication with the family, and they have different things that I think that, you know, they're holding on to for whatever reasons, whether or not they're going to release them or not. But they have been so generous, and, you know, the pictures, the stories. One of her daughters, her oldest daughter, Grace, I was able to have like a half hour conversation with after opening night, and just being able to be like, oh, this is one of your descendants, and hear everything that you're talking about and saying about really, really brought that to life.
And you mentioned that some of them came to the show.
Yeah.
What did they think?
They loved it, which again, how nerve-wracking is that? But I was fortunate to meet them. Where they also came to the new Works Festival the first time around. So that was the first time I met them. And they have had nothing but great things to say. And every time, you know, I see them and, you know, great job, they say, and I'm like, thank you. It is an absolute honor. And all I really want to do is give her justice, because it's everything that she deserves.
How are you warming up every night?
Me moo, me moo, me moo, me moo, moo. I do my basic vocalizes, things like that. I love my vowels. But I also really am a firm believer in breathing, because I think breath takes you much farther than people realize. There's a vocal warm-up that my teacher taught me that singers probably know, where you're just like breathing through a straw, whether you have one or are just imitating that. And that really helps me just like calm my voice, calm my nervous system, and really just start to focus on being present. And then the other thing that is not necessarily like an acting thing is I listen to an audiobook or a podcast, because I feel like it's so easy to get stuck in your head and think about like, oh, what about this scene or this quick change? And I'm like, you have to remember that, like, you know, the show, you've been doing this, you're going to go out there and you're going to leave it all on the stage. So in the meantime, let me ground myself, because the more that I'm grounded right now, the better show I'll be able to give to the audience. So definitely all of that.
Yeah, it's so funny. I don't know why, but every time before you do a show, every time before you go on stage, you're like, I just forgot everything.
Literally.
I don't know what happens in the show.
Or like that feeling of being on autopilot where you're like, I'm out there, but what am I saying? What am I saying? Something that I've always done before shows, which is kind of weird, but I love it, is I imagine that I'm skydiving, jumping out of an airplane, because I love that feeling of my stomach just like falling out. And that, I think it's something about like the nerves. It just like helps them because nerves are good and you got to lean into the nerves.
Well, then you were definitely born to be an actor because most people do not like that feeling.
That was going to be my next question is, do you still get the queasy, the
Oh,
butterflies?
100%, 100%. And it's really funny because I have my entrance, I have to be cued on by one of the stage managers, and I'm always backstage with her, and I'm like, I'm so nervous. What if I do this? Gianna is her name. I'm like, Gianna, what if I like forget the words? I'm like, Gianna, will you go out for me? Do you know this part? But it's something that's totally normal. And the more that you're really able to embrace it, it's instead of pushing it away, the better off you're gonna be.
Yeah, I think you have to as an actor. I mean, I think there are the real psychopaths who really don't ever get that feeling, or they learn how to overcome it. I could never, and I've acted a wee tiny bit, until I realized this is not for me. I'm happier podcasting and writing. But I think you have to embrace the feeling.
A hundred percent.
You have to like get energized by that.
Yeah.
Comfort, would you describe yourself as an extrovert or an introvert?
Extrovert, 100%. And I also just really love people. I love meeting people. Again, I work at Trader Joe's, so being on register is one of my favorite things because I will literally ask people their life story right then and there. And I think the more people that you are able to come across with and speak to and talk to, the more you're able to help yourself grow. When I was really young, I was really shy. And then I don't know what happened, but I'm like, dang, people are really cool. I love them. I love people.
Yeah, I think this is one of the sort of unspoken truths of human reality is that I just don't think that the introverts can really understand that we extroverts get energy out of
Yes, yes.
the exchange. I have a lot of friends who are introverts. I make friends with introverts because I think I can
Yeah.
talk to almost anybody. I think it's one of my better one of my few good qualities. And and the introverts, they will sometimes just look at me with these like puppy dog eyes and go, "How are you still going?"
And you're like, what? I didn't even realize I was talking. Yeah.
Sure. And they just want to go home and curl up with a book. So Comfort, what else do you do when you're not acting or working at Trader Joe's? You live in the Twin Cities. Do you have any other sort of passions or hobbies, fun things you like to
I
do?
sure do. This was the year of me learning how to garden, and it has
Oh,
been
cool.
so much fun. So I have a cute little balcony, and I grew green beans, tomatoes, basil, marigolds, and let me tell you, I don't know where this green thumb came from, but I am picking things like every other day, and I'm very impressed with myself. I also last year I decided again, I just decide to have hobbies whenever I feel like it. So last year my hobby was to learn how to crochet, and my first big project was a temperature blanket, which means every day of the year you crochet a line based on the temperature. So that was a 365 day project. The edges don't match, but I did it and it's so wonderful. But otherwise, yeah, wait, you look like you have a question.
No, this temperature blanket, explain a little further about that. So how does that work?
Yeah, so the way that I did mine, people do it different ways, but the way that I did mine is that you look at the high temperature every day. So every day for a year, whatever the high temperature was, I had like a color-coded sheet. So I'm like, oh, if it's between like 25 and 35 degrees, it's going to be green. And then you just do it in different sections. And so throughout the year, you just have this colorful blanket of maybe I chose like five different colors, but some people do just different shades of blue. But I wanted mine to be very pretty and colorful. So yeah, it's all the high temperatures of 2024 in crochet blanket format.
Cool.
Yeah.
Crochet and then gardening. Yeah, I
Crochet
always
gardening.
say, and every year my wife and I say, oh, because we've got this little patch outside our backyard near the alley. It's got horrible wasps. Well, it's this old wooden, it's like in East St. Paul. It's this old wooden kind of structure. And I spray the wasps and they always come back. And I spray the wasps and they always come back. I think next year I got to hire like a real, you know, and they're probably going to say, you got to tear it up. But it would be perfect for a little garden.
Oh,
and every
my
year
gosh.
We say, we're going to do a little garden. And every year we don't do a little garden.
Well, Kevin, when you decide to do that garden, you let me know. And
okay,
I want
all
you to
right,
give
comfort.
Me some tomatoes.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. There really is nothing like that sort of fruit and veg. The farmer's market downtown
Oh
here.
my
I mean,
gosh.
say what you
Incredible.
want about the Twin Cities. I mean, we've had our problems here recently, but the farmer's market scene in these cities is just outstanding. Every suburb has a farmer's market. Downtown St. Paul has a farmer's market. My understanding is that they're going to open one that Or they're going to get an indoor space, so it's going to be year round now too. Which
No
wouldn't that be
way.
amazing? And I don't want to take any business away from Trader Joe's, but we also have to support our local our local farmers. It's a yes and thing. I mean, you sort of split the budget.
We're
yeah, you
all
can't
winners
always.
here.
Yeah. And I'm sure the fruit and veg at Trader Joe's is outstanding, but there's just nothing like that. You go get an apple from the farmer's market. The other thing that the farmer's market down here, I mean, this is a bit of a tangent, but the
I
other
love
thing about
tangents.
we're talking about downtown St. Paul, where History Theater is, where you can see Don't Miss Doris Hines running until October 12, 2025 with our friend here, Comfort Dolo. Go to historytheater.com. Tickets are on sale now, but they figured out at the farmer's market that people will buy flowers, and they have these like incredible bouquets of flowers for like $6, $8. And now you go all around downtown now and there are flowers everywhere. And it's just what a small, beautiful thing that we can enjoy in life. These little things, that add up. Like a good apple. Like an
like
apple that
a
isn't
good
really,
apple.
Like a good
what's your,
apple.
What's your favorite kind of apple?
Oh, I think I'm a like a Honeycrisp guy. What about you?
I'm a Granny Smith girl. I like the green. I like the green.
I love that with like some brie and maybe like a little like fig spread.
Kevin, you are so bougie. I love it.
I am. I'm very bougie. I'm a redneck in a turtleneck. I come from North Dakota. My siblings and I have all made good. We don't come from much. So little things.
Whatever
like
works for you. Exactly.
A good pair. Comfort, give us, because we're winding down here on Mouthing Off. Maybe you're listening on 94.1 FM Frogtown Radio. Maybe you heard about us at Minnesota Playlist. Maybe you heard about us through History Theater or through your friend Comfort. But we're so glad to have you, Comfort. Again, if and when you have another show, please email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com. And that goes for anybody in the Twin Cities and even beyond. If you have something to promote, you have a piece, you have a book, you have a play, you have a musical, badmouthtc@gmail.com. We love hearing from people. It's an easy hour. I mean, it goes so fast, especially when you have an inveterate extrovert like our friend Comfort
big
here.
Words. I love it.
The episodes produce themselves. Comfort, one more time. Can you tell people about the show and real quick what they can expect, and then we'll wind down.
Absolutely. Doris Hines. Don't miss Doris Hines. She was a Minneapolis jazz singer with a powerhouse voice. She sang for legends like Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald, and it's following her story of her humble beginnings to becoming Doris Hines, essentially. It is a very sweet show, and it really leaves you with the warm and fuzzies. It makes you want to really go after your dreams and remember that whatever you want in life, whatever you believe in, you can do it.
Thank you, Comfort. A real pleasure. Don't miss
Thank
Doris
you,
Hines.
You as well.
Don't miss the show, historytheater.com through October 12th. This is Kevin Kautzman with Mari Sittner. Mari, I hope you're having a great fall out there in New York City. Thanks again, Comfort.
Thank you.